Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. And of course, if this is your first time listening or you've just recently started listening to us, thank you very much for choosing us and putting us in your ears. We're delighted to bring you a conversation today that I had with a rising star in the acting world, the brilliant Agnes O'Casey, who, though born and raised in London, is the great-granddaughter of the incredible playwright Sean O'Casey.
It's just the best thing to be able to read what your family member thought and felt and have a kind of, like, I guess, a relationship with them in a way. You know, like, I feel from reading his plays that he would have liked me because, you know, he liked, you know, you know, things like that. I'm like, I feel like I have this relationship with him. I feel really sorry for my other great-grandparents because I don't know as much about them.
First, though, there's some breaking news today that Gardaí have called in Assistant State Pathologist Dr. Margot Bolster to Tina Satchwell's home in Youghal, County Cork, where it is understood that some human remains have been found. You'll remember that Tina Satchwell went missing in March 2017. There are currently two search sites, apparently the house where the 45-year-old used to live in Youghal, and which Gardaí started searching on Tuesday night after the arrest of a man in his 50s. And the other search site is a privately owned laneway to one side of the house. I've been reading the story in The Examiner, and it says that forensic teams were working in shifts up until late last night at the house and began again earlier this morning. They've been clearing and digging in the laneway, and detectives have been hacking through overgrowth and chopping down trees and clearing a section of that laneway. And you'll also remember that up until this week, that this was a missing persons case, but new evidence appears to have prompted Gardaí to raise the level of their investigation to that of a murder inquiry. And that man in his 50s who was arrested on Tuesday was released on Wednesday without charge. But obviously there's a lot of moving developments in that story, and we'll be keeping a close eye on it. I also wanted to look ahead to the elections in Poland on Sunday, which are going to have significant ramifications for the women there, who make up 52% of the population. And we know, and we've covered on this podcast, that their rights in Poland have been rolled back, particularly their reproductive rights, in recent years. And I was reading an excellent report by Derek Scally in the Irish Times about the elections, which he says are considered by many to be Europe's most important election this year. The vote will decide the direction, liberal or illiberal democracy, of this country of 38 million and its place in the EU. Derek wrote that polls suggest the ruling National Conservative Law and Justice PIS party is certain to finish 5 or 6 points short of the support needed for an absolute majority. Its hopes of a record third term hinge on uncertain coalition options with smaller parties. And polling agencies believe Sunday's election will be decided by the undecided, which make up around 9% of the total electorate, of which the majority are women. And he quoted particularly angry young women, like a woman he talked to called Inez, at a rally in Lodz, an industrial city in central Poland. And she is a political debutante who has a blunt message for PIS chairman Jarosław Kaczynski, Jarek to his friends, who is the country's de facto leader. And Inez said at this rally, "I want to send a message to a man who hates women. Jarek, your government will be destroyed by women." And Derek wrote that anger over the rollback of women's rights overseen by Kaczynski could swing an already charged election campaign. Millions of women have attended protest marches and vigils in the last 2 years since Poland restricted legal abortion to cases of rape, incest, or if there's a threat to a woman's life or health. Tightening abortion rules played well with traditional and conservative PIS voters and its allies in the Catholic Church. But Derek writes that each month brings fresh cases of pregnant women dying from complications in hospitals as uncertain medical teams look on afraid to intervene, which of course has big resonance with what we went through in this country. So we'll watch those election results with interest and hope that, as Derek suggests, the undecideds do swing that result in favour of women and in favour of a more liberal regime for Poland. Now, though born and raised in London, rising star of acting Agnes O'Casey is the great-granddaughter of Dublin playwright Sean O'Casey, author of those incredible plays such as The Plough and the Stars, Shadow of a Gunman and Juno and the Paycock. And she also studied at the Lear Academy in Dublin, so her Irish credentials are impeccable. You might have seen her in Ridley Road, where she was brilliant in the series based on the true story of Jewish activists infiltrating Nazi groups in post-war London. Her latest role is in the psychological thriller Lies We Tell, which is set in Ireland in 1864, in which O'Casey plays Maud, a young heiress who comes under the guardianship of her uncle, who we soon discover has nefarious reasons for moving into Maud's mansion with his own children. Agnes, or Aggie as she is known, has those great Irish credentials, as I said. So we talked about that heritage, and we also talked about the fact that her career is off to a flying start, because in addition to Ridley Road and Lies We Tell, she is also featured in the upcoming movie adaptation of Small Things Like These, based on Claire Keegan's book. Cillian Murphy stars in that, and that was adapted for screen by Enda Walsh. She's also in The Miracle Club, which features an all-star cast including Laura Linney, Kathy Bates and Maggie Smith. So we talked about her famous great-grandfather, her desire not to be pigeonholed when it comes to the roles she plays, and about her own father's misgivings about her going into the notoriously precarious industry. We had a great chat and I really hope you enjoy it. Agnes O'Casey, Aggie O'Casey, as your friends call you, and you're a friend of the Women's Podcast now. You are starring in a brand new movie, Lies We Tell, and it's out tomorrow, Friday the 13th. I hope you're not superstitious.
No, I know. I was thinking that that was a bit of a scary move, but I guess...
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a scary movie, if you ask me.
Well, exactly. And it's coming out with all the other scary movies. I think, like, Saw and Halloween and stuff. We were like, God, we've got scary movie competition big time.
It is quite a dark coming-of-age film. It's set in 1864. Tell us a bit about the film and what people can expect. I watched it the other day and I just really, really loved it. And your performance is quite amazing. But tell us about the story of Lies We Tell.
So it's set in 1864 when the book was written, based on a book by Sheridan Le Fanu called Uncle Silas. And the concept is basically about what happens when the people who are meant to protect you the most are out to get you. And it's a young heiress whose uncle, who she's never met, moves in and brings her cousins. And she's kind of really excited about this new prospect of family, because she's grown up quite isolated. And he slowly starts to usurp her. And it's a battle of wills. It's so even though it's an old text, what Elizabeth Gooch, the writer, has done is just like made it such a modern story. And so it feels like the world that we're witnessing is also our world. Like I think that it's very recognizable. I don't know what you'd feel, but that basic, I'm really proud of it. It's like the writer is a genius, essentially, for what she's done. And it's thrilling and it's cathartic, I hope. Yeah, it's tricky to talk about it without spoiling anything.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think it has a lot of things that we discuss on the Women's Podcast a lot, like, you know, women's empowerment or women being oppressed. And then also there's quite a dark, I think it's okay to say, part of it, which is around sexual assault, which is a very, very powerful scene, which I had to kind of, I was watching it on my laptop. I had to pause it for a bit because it's quite harrowing and very well done, I thought. But yeah, it's amazing how, considering it's such an old story, as you say, that it actually has resonance much beyond, and it feels quite contemporary in a weird way, like grappling with things that women, unfortunately, are still having to deal with today.
Exactly. And I think the writer was writing in with this thing in mind that there are like four things you can do in the face of abuse of power. It's like, I hope I get these right now, but there's like comply, you know, ignore it, another one, and resist. And so she had this idea of like, what if Maud just resists at every single juncture? You know, she like never gives up as a like a practice. And I think that's what makes it kind of amazing to play, because I don't know, I like when it comes to like fight, flight and freeze, like I'm a big freezer, or you know, like it's just kind of amazing to play someone so determined, I guess.
That's interesting you say that, because it's again going back to the sexual assault in the film, that idea of the freezing, and we read about it and hear about it so much now, how people are supposed to respond when those things happen, you know, how women are supposed to respond. Why did they not, you know, tell anyone? Why did they not kind of fight back more or whatever? And there's still this idea that even in the face of such trauma, that you're somehow supposed to have the wherewithal to know how to react, which is clearly ridiculous, because in that moment you are in that freezing situation,
exactly,
where you don't know how to react.
Which is a self-preservation mode, you know, which is like, it's so dark that that would then be used against you, your own sort of like tools to protect yourself. Because that's what, we do that when there's no other option, you know, it's yeah.
It's total self-preservation and thinking, what's the path of least resistance? How can I get through this in order to survive this terrible moment? It's really beautifully shot as well, I have to say, to for anyone who's going to go and see it. It's really atmospheric. It's a psychological thriller, and it's kind of one of those films you watch on the edge of your seat the whole time. Like, you're never really comfortable. You're always looking at Maud, as you said, is the name of your character. And she's a very singular, kind of self-possessed young woman who is quite, for the time, I'd say, quite ahead of her time in a way, is aware of her agency and her power as an heiress who comes into this big, huge house. It was filmed in Ardgillan House in Balbriggan. I've never been there. But what was it like to be filming in an actual sort of a place like that? It seems like perfect for the story.
It's beautiful. And also it was just amazing because like they gave us the castle and we were like, we could eat in the cafe. It was like, it was just so lovely. And also it's so atmospheric. There are stories, you know, there are ghost stories about it as well. A woman who's always on the beach, you know, things like that. So it was really fun. It's also beautiful because it's by the sea. Yeah, I don't know. It was an amazing space, and the like the set designers were so great as well. Considering the budget, like, it's actually amazing what they were able to do.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's quite a low budget film comparatively, but it doesn't feel like that when you're watching it. Like, it feels like quite a, you know, yeah. It feels very rich and beautifully shot, as I said.
Yeah, it's genius. Well, actually, as soon as I said it, I was like, no, because I try and not talk about the fact it's low budget, because it's great for people to not realise and then find that out after. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, but, I didn't realise it until after. I mean, I watched it and then I was surprised to learn that.
Exactly,
I hadn't got the biggest budget in the world. Tell us about some of your co-stars, because the guy who plays the Maud's uncle, David Wilmot, is a brilliant actor who people will have seen in lots of different things. And also Chris Whalley from The Young Offenders is so unrecognisable in it. And he's a good friend of yours.
Yeah, so we were friends before, which is great, because like we've got to do some really harrowing things together, which made it much easier. And he is unrecognizable. I cannot wait for people to see it, because I reckon, you know, people might not put the two and two together. He's so different.
Definitely not. I you wouldn't know it was him.
He's genius. He's one of the best actors I know. He's just so incredible. And it was so fun getting to do those scenes with him. Like, especially scenes that, because he's like, has to sort of try and woo her, but Riz like really doesn't like her. And so, and she's sort of like a peculiar thing. Like the scenes between them are like, especially the less dark ones, were really funny to have to do. Because something about Maud that you say, like, she is ahead of her time for the period. But I think that's because she's been brought up with just her dad. And she's been given like a lot of freedom in terms of like total access to the library. And all right, this is also a time where women weren't allowed to read in their head, because they might have a private thought with a book, and that's kind of like uncontrollable. So she's been given the reins in a way that no one else has. And she's also been very isolated in a way that she's enjoyed, I think. You know, she really enjoys her own headspace. But I think that that sort of saves her from the male gaze. She doesn't know how to perform femininity or womanhood in the same way that a lot of women would have been trained to.
Yeah, she just doesn't have that sensibility.
Yeah, exactly, which is so fun to play because I'd only... And I've really enjoyed the other roles I've played, but they've all been quite, like, glamorous or, like, meant to be aesthetically beautiful, which is, like, kind of fun in its own way, but also a bit terrifying. Whereas it's fun to just, like, fully be given the reins to just be a bit peculiar.
Now, we talked about the castle and it being filmed in Ireland, but obviously, even though everyone's going to hear your accent and think, Aggie, she's totally English, you're very much linked to Ireland in a very big way. You are the great-granddaughter of the incredible genius Sean O'Casey. And what's amazing listening and hearing about your story is that your grandmother, Siobhan, who's still very much with us, who was Sean O'Casey's daughter, used to bring you to Dublin to see his plays from a very early age. So tell us about growing up with that legacy and coming to Dublin throughout your childhood to see your great-grandfather's words on stage.
I mean, I guess it was the most amazing gift of my life because I'd be living a very normal life in London and I don't remember what I thought the fact, but Shiv would take me and it would be like this incredible world of this, my great-granddad who'd created these plays and I loved them so much. And then throughout my life, it's changed in a really lovely way. Like, it's just the best thing to be able to read what your family member thought and felt and have a kind of, like, I guess, a relationship with them in a way. You know, like, I feel from reading his plays that he would have liked me because, you know, he'd like, you know, you know, things like that. I'm like, I feel like I have this relationship with him. I feel really sorry for my other great-grandparents because I don't know as much about them. But it's been the best. And I mean, my grandma sort of like brought me up with my parents as well. And it's very interlinked in our relationship. And she's just the best. So someone asked me like, oh, what do you think you'd do if Sean O'Casey wasn't your great granddad? And I was like, I actually like they're so interlinked. My life and that is so interlinked that I have no idea what my life would be. You know.
And do you remember as a young girl going to see the plays? Like, do you remember the first time or do you remember what effect his words had on? Because what I always think about Sean O'Casey is it's incredible when you think about it. He was writing as it was happening, really, the nation building history of this country that and he was doing it in real time. You know, it's incredible when you think of those plays. They were so fresh from, you know, 1916 or whatever, Clarence Stars and Shadow of a Gunman. It was so important that he was there to document and to kind of really put the magnifying glass on what this country was going through. As a girl, were you conscious of that aspect of it? Was it more this person who wrote these words, I'm related, and as you got older, you kind of started to understand the significance?
I think I didn't understand the significance of them being put on at the time. I understood the stories, but really, I guess the first time I saw it when I was six, the thing that stood out to me the most, it was Shadow of a Gunman, it was Minnie Pell, and like the love scene between the two of them at the beginning, I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the world, like I have to do this. I remember that feeling. And then her running down the stairs with the suitcase at the end, it was more like I was like invested in her character rather than understand, you know, like I guess I couldn't have. And then as I got older, because they're doing the plays at the moment, Druid are doing the three plays and they did them in Belfast and it was like a really different, like really amazing recept. Like people were in bits over Juno and I think there's something about remembering what it might be like when conflict is more in your present, what that might mean to watch those plays. Like it must have been incredible.
Because they literally caused riots. I mean, I remember talking to, when I was talking to Sinead O'Connor, beautiful Sinead, about actually even mentioned Sean O'Casey's plays, that's what art should do. Art should have the power to cause riots and to cause upheaval like that. That's what art should be. And that's what he did. I mean, literally causing riots on the streets of Dublin and in the Abbey with Yeats having to go on the stage and calm everyone down. I mean, it's an incredibly powerful thing to do as an artist.
Exactly. And I feel like I was actually thinking about this in regards to Sinead when she passed, is I feel like it's so easy as an artist to like conform and forget what you're meant to do, you know.
She definitely never forgot, thank goodness, and we're all the better for it. It's just so sad we haven't got more of her amazing art. Just going back to your great-grandfather, this being the Women's Podcast, we definitely have to pay tribute to him because he was such a massive supporter of women in Ireland. He was ahead of his time. He was a massive feminist. And the documentary that was made by your grandmother, Siobhan, I think it was called Under a Coloured Cap, and she talks about his concern of the hold the Catholic Church had on women here in the 40s, 50s, and how he wrote to loads of women over the years. Your grandmother found letters from one woman in particular whose child was taken away from her, and another woman who was made to take a vow of chastity by a bishop in England. And he also, again, so ahead of his time, thought abortion should be the woman's decision and health and schools should be free to people. So he was this amazingly free thinker and quite modern in the views that he held. So are you very proud of him in that aspect also? Because when I heard all about that, I was like, what a man, you know, what an amazing person.
Exactly. I'm so proud. It's like the most incredible thing. He was such a free thinker. And you can see it in my grandma. Like, she's just the most amazing woman. And that's just like, from a personal level, it's been amazing to be brought up in that like environment of that like legacy of feminism and socialism. It's incredible.
And O'Casey isn't your actual name, but that's the name you took for stage reasons. Was that always going to be the case, do you think? I mean, is it important to you to have that name out there? And
yeah, I mean, I thought of changing it before even. And then the stage name was a great way of like, oh, I can sort of do both. Because when my grandma's brother passed away, I had this feeling of the name dying out, or like worried about that, because there's a lot of girls in our family, and so a lot of women are getting married and changing their names. So I was like, okay,
which, no, why I, are I they doing that? On a separate note, Aggie, why are they changing their names? You don't have to do that, you know.
No, I know, but I guess
still convention, isn't it?
I guess it, yeah. And also, you know, like, not anymore, but I've dated guys who have been like, no, you'd be taking my name if you got
what?
Married.
But you're only, what age are you?
27.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me that guys of your age and generation would still be thinking that that's something that the woman has to do.
It's wild. Are you not embarrassed?
Yeah, I hope you said that to them at the time, did you?
I can't really remember. I think I was 20, so I doubt they said something that cool, but I remember being pretty horrified.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Your great-grandfather famously sort of left Ireland, as a lot of artists did, and that's why you're in London. He made his life there. But you came back to Dublin to study at the Lear Academy. And was that interesting as a cultural thing to come back as this person who had all these Irish links and probably felt very much in themselves Irish, but then coming to Dublin, was it a bit of a rude awakening as well, and discovering
it was
about Irishness in a different
exactly
way?
It was exactly that. Because it's so embarrassing to say, but also I guess like this is probably the people who have Irish relatives feel this a lot. I really felt very connected, and I, you know, I think I would have almost been like, yeah, I'm Irish. And then you come over to Dublin, and there's just like so many cultural references. Like, I just realized slowly, like, oh my God, I'm such a Brit. And that is a horrible realization, but that is just the truth. And I don't have, like, I remember a joke being made about nuns and everyone like absolutely erupting into laughter and me being like, oh, there's a catharsis around the Catholic Church that I don't need because I wasn't raised Catholic, you know. It was definitely a rude awakening would be how I would call it. And so many funny things happening. Like, I remember once saying, oh, my, like, how much I love a bath, and someone being like, that's such a Protestant thing. Me being like, no, I don't want to be. That's so unfair. But, yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you had to sort of wrestle with your inner Brit and your inner English person, even though, but I'm sure you reconciled it, and it was good. You probably became more Irish having spent time here.
Yeah, totally.
Did you retrace any of your great grandfather's steps, by the way? Because I live in North Strand, and I think he lived not far from there at one point. And I have a book about Dublin where somebody goes to visit him. It's fascinating. It was an incredible person. Did you ever go to anywhere where he used to live or anything like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've got like pictures through the years, like of me through like awkward teen stages posing outside his different houses.
I love it. You have only worked with women directors so far, really, because you're only not long into your career, right? I mean, you had the whole pandemic, which interrupted. And I know you were going to play Minnie in Shadow of a Gunman, which would have been amazing in The Gate. And that got interrupted because of the pandemic. What has it been like so far? Because the Ridley Road is your other big role, and that kind of came around at the same time as Lies We Tell, I think. So, yeah. Yes, you've just worked with women directors so far. How has that been? I suppose you've nothing.
It's been the best. I just love women. It's just great to work with women. I'm so glad that that's been my experience, and also I think that like it was always women that gave me the jobs. I feel like it's women that have seen the potential in me rather than men, you know? And Ridley Road was an amazing thing because it was like all women, producer, writer, director, and like everyone worked so well together, and like tricky conversations had to be had. Like it wasn't just like, because I feel like I was talking to someone, there was an assumption that it's just all really nice and everyone's just being really, it's not like that. Like it's just like, it just works really well. I don't know. I think it's just the best. I actually did work with, you know, I have worked with male directors before in the Lear, but in terms of my professional career, yeah, it's been all women. And Uncle Silas, sorry, Lies We Tell was a POV scheme that was especially about female talent. So basically everyone on set was a woman, and that was amazing. It's like a special atmosphere that comes with that.
Lovely. You did a very good interview with Shilpa Ganetra, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago for the Irish Times. And I'm just going to refer back to it because I thought this is very interesting. She was talking about the particular, you being quite attuned to the difficulties you face as a non-heterosexual female in an industry that's framed for the heterosexual male. And you were talking about that different parts of you that you're still trying to figure out. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? I thought that was very interesting. As a young woman growing up today where, you know, things are a lot more fluid and a lot more than it would have been when I was growing up, say.
Yeah, well, I think that brings me right back to that time as well. Basically, I think because I'm quite femme presenting, the only things that I was being considered for were like very heterosexual stories. And I was finding that very frustrating because I felt like there was this whole element of my identity that was going to be totally unexplored. And I don't, like, in my work, I don't think, I hope that won't be the case now, but it still happens. And as you know, with femme presenting women, you just have to constantly come out again and again and again. It's kind of exhausting. And then it's a strange I guess it's still a strange industry for that, like. But I haven't really come across much, you know, biphobia or anything like that in the industry. It's just still very heterosexual stories, I think, even now.
Yeah, and also, do you think, as you know, when you say femme presenting or just as an attractive young woman, like there's certain expectations of roles that you play, or you know, putting you in a box or pigeonholing you in that way?
That was it. I think I felt very pigeonholed because I was also like in the press a lot of the time, and I was arriving to like PR put together shoots and I'd be given like a flowery dress. And I felt like I was sort of like being put into a mold of all the other like beautiful actresses that have come before me. I literally felt like I was like stepping into a costume, which was really freaking me out, making me feel quite claustrophobic. And like, because all of the actresses that I know and love, I was like, well, they're so gorgeous, and I really, but that is not who I am. And that's sort of like, it was, I've had a lot of friends who have experienced the same. Like when you're first in the public eye, it's kind of terrifying because it's a blank slate, no one knows you. And I guess what is maybe more desired is for you to look a particular type of glam, photoshopped, you know?
Yeah, I imagine as you move through your career, you're going to kind of be someone who resists that. And as you get more, you know, agency and autonomy and power in your own, you know, and more roles behind you, that, like, I always look at someone like Jessie Buckley, another sort of an Irish person who, just when I see her on the red carpet or I see her, it's very clear she's made her own decisions about how she's presenting herself and is not going along necessarily with what might be expected.
Exactly. I get a lot of freedom when I look at Jessie Buckley, actually. I'm like, oh, this is great. And I love, oh my God, I love the things she wears. So, yeah, exactly that. I think you need to constantly remind yourself, because in this industry, it's like, because also I'm such a people pleaser, you do just sort of like think, oh, what's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to do?
That's so interesting you say you're a people pleaser. Are you doing much work on that? Because I was interviewed Daisy Edgar-Jones before. I don't know if you know Daisy, but so you'd be of a similar vintage to her. And she talked about doing work on that and trying to fix that in herself. Is that something you're acutely conscious of in your personality?
Oh, yeah, it's a lifelong mission, I guess. I'm getting better at it now. But I'm totally, like, you know, I'd run around London because by mistake I'd made a few plans with different people. I'd be like, okay, no, we have to. And it just, it's an impulse, isn't it? That's the problem. Because you're trying to work on it and then something happens. You're like, but I feel like I'm getting better at it now.
And it's funny, do you think it's a kind of a particularly female thing?
Definitely. Definitely. It just is. Like, I would have male friends that would be like, why are you doing that? Like, I actually don't understand. Or like, why wouldn't you just say you don't want to do that? It's literally like they don't understand why, because you're just raised to be accommodating to people, even in a really great liberal family. Like, I don't mean that against my parents or anything. It's just, you know, the external world, I guess. But also at school, like, I went to a really cool school, but then there were times where we were like, sat down and told not to wear certain things. I remember in RE, like religious education, being told not to wear too short skirts because, you know, that was asking for it. Kind of like literally things like that, you know.
Yeah, and those things go in. You're just socialised and they go in on the kind of subconscious level, don't they? And they emerge in different ways in how you behave.
It's just so annoying. I think there's something so exhausting about being a woman because you just got so much to unlearn. You're like, Christ, and now there's more and more and more.
And I thought when you guys were coming up in your 20s that it would be all sorted. You know, in the Barbie movie where they think everything is sorted in the real world, yes. You know, but it kind of has to keep being unlearned, I think, continually. It's never going to end, is it?
No, I don't. Well, I mean, hopefully one day
it's getting
it will.
Better now.
And like my little sister's generation, I feel like is great. I have a lot of hope for them.
What did your family think when you were going to go on the stage? Was there anybody going, oh no, don't do it, given, you know, you're a very creative family, it's in the blood, it's in everything, but were there other people going, oh, can she not just have a normal career, can she not be an accountant?
I know my dad, he was like, Aggie, you are relatively academic, like you could actually have a normal job, like what are you doing? He's like, please. I think because my family are creative, they know what it's like. They were like, don't be so silly, like, please do. The day I got into the Lear, my dad was like, oh, I was just really hoping you'd never get in.
Oh, that's lovely. Thanks, Dad.
Like, great. But now, you know, he was just protecting me, and now it's okay. You know, it's gone fine. You know, obviously, there's all sorts of ups and downs and stuff, but it's gone okay. Now he's relaxed and he's all proud. But at the beginning, he was like, oh, please do something normal.
Now, we're here to talk about Lies We Tell, which everyone can watch. As I said, it's out tomorrow, Friday 13th. But you also have two other really big projects. One is The Miracle Club, which is like the most phenomenal cast, Laura Linney and Kathy Bates and Maggie Smith. Tell us about that first of all, and then talk to me about your role in Claire Keegan's Small Things Like These, which I'm very excited to see, which is going to be starring Cillian Murphy. But The Miracle Club, first of all, what was it like walking on set with those legends?
I mean, I was so nervous at first. I remember I arrived in the hotel and someone was like, oh, Maggie's in the garden, would you like to go and say hello? And I was like, I guess I have to at some point, you know, like, I guess the time is now. And I walked up to her and she just turned around and I was like, hi, I'm Maggie. And she's like, oh, Maggie and Aggie. And then just was like so warm immediately. And so I felt very comfortable very quickly because they were so nice. And the same with Laura and the same with Kathy. Like, thank God, they were just so normal and funny. So it just became my normal life for 6 weeks, which was very surreal.
Tell us a little bit about that story, because that movie's out now too, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's about three friends who want to go to Lourdes for their sort of various problems that they have in their lives.
And set in the 60s?
Set in the 60s.
Dublin.
Yeah. And so they enter a talent competition to try and win tickets.
As you do.
You know. And Laura Linney's character is like a character from their past, and she arrives and they sort of have to reconcile a lot of guilt that they've been burying. And my character in particular carries around a lot of guilt for something she did that she's trying to seek forgiveness for.
And then Small Things Like These, which has been adapted by Enda Walsh, the brilliant Enda Walsh, from Claire Keegan's amazing novel. Was that a great gig to get? Cillian Murphy stars in it and you play Cillian's mother, funnily enough, but in flashbacks, basically.
Yeah, it was the best. Like, it was actually the best. It was one of the smaller times on set that I've had. It was like, I think I was there for like 3 or 4 days. The director, Tim, is so funny. The whole set was so warm. I can't wait to see that as well, actually, because the book is so gorgeous. And like, I know that Cillian and Enda will do something amazing with it. I cannot wait to see that.
And speaking of films you can't wait to see, what have you seen recently that you've absolutely loved? Or who are your role models in the industry?
I saw The Scrapper. I don't know if you've seen that yet.
Oh.
It's incredible. It's about this young girl whose mother has died and she's trying to trick social services into thinking that her uncle's there. It's incredible. Go and, like, I would highly recommend it. It's like really heartfelt without being sentimental. Like, it's like this perfect balance. I absolutely loved that.
And actors that you admire, people that you kind of think, okay, I'd like a career like that.
Do you know what? I find that question really hard. I don't think I see myself in any of the actors that I love. I'm like, so I can't really imagine a path like theirs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Like, I always struggle with that question because I've never been like, yes. I mean, like,
that's not what motivates you, basically. You haven't got into it for that. It's a different...
I think that's it. Exactly. Because I feel like, yeah, I'm constantly like sat before interviews being like, let's think about whose career I might like, because I think I'm gonna, like, come on. I mean, like, someone like Tilda Swinton, I think she's like, her like physical command over her body and the sort of like total transformation she's made, that's the hope for my career, I guess, is just to be able to play as many different characters as possible. And I think so far that's really happened. My character Dolly in Miracle Club and is like totally different from Lies We Tell, like couldn't be further away. And I guess that's my hope for the... Because when you're at drama school, it's like this lovely utopia of like anyone can play anything and that's what the training supports you for. And then you go out into the world and it's like, what's your type? Oh yeah, okay, so you fit this, this and this, this. You have this quality, you're like, oh, this wasn't what I trained for.
I have to say, it's quite a special talking to you just before you go because of the fact that you are the great-granddaughter of Sean O'Casey. And back in the day when I was like a teenager, I was in Dublin New Theatre and we once did this. Dublin New Theatre was set in a building on Gardiner Street, one of the old tenement buildings that he would have been writing about. So we did a production of Plough and the Stars where each scene It was one of those promenade, I think, is the thing where the audience has to go along with you. So the scenes were in the building and then we walked along the street and we did up the whole streetscape as if it was the time. And then the pub scenes were done in a pub called Tony's Pub around the corner. It was all around that area. It was fun. It was amazing. And so, a very special thing to have been part of. But the thing is, I only played a random passerby woman in the Salvation Army. That's all I was. I hadn't got any named role. But just to be part of something like that, to recreate that streetscape of your great-grandfather's time and, you know, the barricades and all of that. And it was amazing. I sometimes wish it had been filmed because I think it was quite an amazing production of it that hasn't been seen before or since.
I would absolutely love to have seen that. Like, that's incredible that they actually dressed the road and the park.
Like Bessie Burgess was shouting out the window, you know, the
Stop.
Audience could see we're outside. It was
incredible.
And we were all just teenagers just doing this thing and it felt very important at the time. But anyway, I suppose it's just that he was such an important documenter of the formation of this of the state, really. And I always think the fact that he went off, and then I know there was those tussles between Yeats and Lady Gregory, and him not accepting, you know, them not wanting some of the plays that he had, and you know, that sort of sense of exile that a lot of, again, Irish artists have had. So he just must have been an incredible person to. I know you didn't obviously get to meet him, but you have as close, as near as you can to have all the stories handed down. And that legacy, the fact that you're back and playing Irish roles. And do you think sometimes if there is an afterlife and he's looking down, is he kind of going, well done, Aggie, fair play to you there? Or what do you think?
I really hope so. I hope so, because it does feel like it's nice to come back. Like, I knew I wanted to go to the Lear. I knew I wanted to come back to Dublin because it is so sad. It was the Silver Tassie that was rejected from the Abbey.
The Silver Tassie, that's right, yeah.
And he basically, it was getting put on in London, so his work was being accepted elsewhere. So that's when, you know, he moved over. I mean, I really hope so. It's funny, like, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm not sentimental about it. But then I did a reading once with Sebastian Barry. And Sebastian Barry was like, just in passing, was like, oh, your great-granddad would have been really proud of you. And it was so funny because it was so socially not okay at the time. I just burst into tears. It was so cringe. I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, yeah, this is cool. And then, like, went to the toilet. Thanks, Sebastian.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Listen, delighted for you with this role and the fact that, as you said, the role so far in Ridley Road, which we haven't spoken too much about, but that was an amazing TV series as well, also directed by Lisa Mulcahy, who directed you in Lies We Tell. You have had the chance already to play these very different roles and to kind of express yourself in different ways, which hopefully that will continue and you'll be able to continue to kind of to be the actor that you want to be, not the one that the industry is kind of sometimes so often foists upon young women particularly. And it's just been really great to talk to you. So give us a last minute. Why should people go and see you in Lies We Tell? What people can expect?
Well, I think it's really exciting to see an Irish period drama like this. I haven't seen one like this. And I think that, like, I mean, I'm so proud of this film and the women that have made it happen, Ruth the producer, Elizabeth the writer, like, they are so incredible and have worked so hard. And I guess I'm really proud of what we've created, and I hope that people aren't scared off by the thriller element if they're not, you know, a bit scared watching scary things, because, like, it's safe, it'll be okay. It is cathartic. I think the way that it's made, that it sort of like helps you. My poor mom didn't feel this way. My poor mom was literally inconsolable. But I think that's just because she watched me doing it all, you know. I think that it's full of heart. It's like my character Maud isn't like a character I've seen before. There are moments where it's really funny as well. I really hope people go out and see it. I think.
Well, I can highly recommend it. And I'm not the biggest fan of the more scarier thriller movies, but I was engrossed. And I think that sort of female storyline, the idea of a woman who's thwarting all these expectations at every turn is very compelling. And you do such a wonderful job in it, Aggie. And it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. And I hope you'll come on again maybe another time for your next role.
Anytime. I'd love that. This has been so fun. Thank you.
That was Agnes O'Casey there, and Lies We Tell is out now. And if you enjoyed this episode and the podcast, please leave us a review or subscribe to the podcast, as it really makes a difference to us. The podcast is produced by Suzanne Brennan and by me, Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. Talk to us on social at IT Women's Podcast or email us on thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. That's it from me. Mind yourselves, and I'll talk to you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.